Welcome to the second episode of the BribeBox podcast. My name is Peter, this is Rion, and together we are trying to create the ultimate podcast for financial education for South Africans.
Hello, Peter. Yeah, nice to be here again today. Like you said, second one in a stormy Cape Town this week. Glad we're both here and there's no damage to our properties or that we're all both safe. So that's good. So today we'll discuss the financial myths that we want to bust a little bit. So I think it's a fun and interactive discussion that we'll have. We'll name 10 things or discuss 10 things that we think are crucial for us to almost bust in a way in saying, nope.
Yeah, no. So some financial myths are funnier than others, and some are actually things that people really believe is the truth, which is not. So yeah, we're going to dig into it, have a little bit of a chat.
Yeah, and some of them, I guess, is like the way we grew up.
Yeah.
Right. So stuff that we almost as a generation feel like this is the way that we need to get forward.
Yeah, we've always done it this way. Yeah. So it should always be like this.
Yeah, it's actually interesting discussion I had with another friend at a Braai, actually. And we can discuss now, again, why BribeBox specifically. But it's interesting how we go through generations. And if you speak to a specific generation, so our generation and our friends normally, all gets like, yes, my parents also taught me that. So you do need to go study. Otherwise, you won't make money, or you do need to buy property as soon as you can. So it's stuff like that whole generation learned, but it feels like they go through cycles because their parents didn't have that. Mm. And so they almost like a tough life. And it's like, okay, my children be better. And then we get to our generation again. It's like, I wonder what our generation or our kids, when they grow up, is like the common thing that we'll teach them.
Hopefully, if people are watching our podcast, it will be something valuable. So that's what we're aiming for. Mm-hmm. But yeah, quite excited. How's the weather been your side? Any damage? It's for those who don't know, and if you watch this in the future, there's currently some massive floods in Cape Town. It's quite disastrous. Some roofs are just blowing off houses, and it's quite a lot of storm water. For us, luckily, we haven't had any major issues yet. Hopefully, it will.
But it's also not really your issue, luckily.
Yes, benefits of renting. Yeah. If something happens, I just phone the landlord. But yeah, shame. Some people are really suffering, and prayers are with them. But do you guys have any problems?
So not really. So I think our house held up quite nicely, and it's actually my issue because I don't own the place. The bank owns it, but yeah. I need to maintain it naturally. But there's the one thing. So our fireplace every 2 years leaks. So it's leaking again. So unfortunately, there's going to be a few thousand rand again out of the pocket. And yeah, I wish someone can just do a proper job. And that lasts for 5 years. But that fireplace, I promise you, every 2 years, it leaks.
Yeah, that's where the emergency fund comes in, which we will cover in another episode. Before we're going to start off, we just want to remind the audience that part of this journey, what we're trying to do is review a beverage or a drink of every episode, something South African that we all kind of know, and it's kind of just shout South African when you see it. Last time we did a Zamalekki, a black label. Today we're going to review a Castle Light, light because we're on a diet. And because no one drinks Castle anymore.
The most are true that the camera adds 10 kilos. So feel like that's where we need to go light.
Yeah, we also look bigger. We're actually very fit. But cheers on the second episode of the BribeBox.
Also do some, I know both times we're in the beverage. Yeah, cheers, and then you have to take us up. But I guess we're just in the spirit of, the rugby starting again. Mm. So it's, good times to start with beverages, but we're also looking forward to some of the food items.
Hopefully we'll scope Ireland again this weekend.
Hopefully.
As we did last weekend. Hopefully Rassie will be in their heads again, as he always is. But yeah, so let's kick it off. Rion, what is the first financial myth in South Africa?
Yeah, so the first financial myth, let's talk about this, is investing is only for the rich.
It's a very common belief. I think it's... On face value, it makes sense because you need money to invest. I think back in the day, it was the case where having access to investments was only through a specific platform. You needed to have a broker which traded, that movies like Wolf of Wall Street, where the guys are on the phone and they're making the calls and they're writing on the notes. That was what investing used to be. So
was there a minimum amount that you needed to put down? So they, I don't know.
I'm not sure. Most likely, because you had to, the trades was quite high. Mm. So you as a retail investor, which just means anyone that's not a professional, like a normal guy on the street, didn't have access to the market. So yes, at that point in time, you needed to have a lot of money. But now with technology and the internet, we all have access to investment platforms. The barrier of entry is very low. Platforms like Easy Equities, Stenex, Signia, Allan Gray, they really make it easy for us to open an account and to start investing. So no, it's not the truth anymore. We can actually start investing with as little as like 5 or 10 rand. So that maybe that was a truth back in the past, but it's not the same anymore.
Yeah. And I think this is something that changed, but with something like Easy Equities, you don't have to buy a full share. Mm. So the way I understand is you can buy a share of a share.
Yeah.
So like you said, you can literally start investing with 5 rand or 10 rand. You don't need to buy a Woolworths that's, you know, almost 70 rand. So you don't have to do it in multiples of 70 rand as an example.
Yeah, it's a fractional investing. Is basically, instead of buying one Google share of 2,000 rand, you can put 10 rand in and that's a fraction of the share. So if the share price goes up, your 10 rand also goes up proportionally. So that's very nice, and that's kind of democratizing access to investing in South Africa specifically. It's more recent in South Africa than overseas, because South Africa is always lagging about 4 or 5 years, but now there's actually no excuse to not start investing. You can literally start with 5 rand, 10 rand a month.
So I believe that myth is busted. So you're saying investing is not only for the rich. I believe to become rich, you need to be investing.
Yeah, and it's more about developing the habit of living below your means, putting money away and investing it and doing it consistently. That's going to make you rich over the long term. And whether that's with 5 rand or 500,000 rand, you need to learn how to manage little amounts so that you can learn to manage a lot. And that is building habits. So even if you feel like maybe you're a student or you're starting with your job, or maybe you don't even have a job, or you're just doing kind of odd jobs on the side, start in going into the habit of investing. These accounts are free to open. You can even, with a platform like Easy Equities, you can use fake money. There's monopoly money, which is just like fictional, but you can actually invest and you can see stuff grow. So more so developing the habit, I think that's the most important thing. And the quantity is kind of, it's irrelevant in that sense, because if you invest long enough, it will start to compound, especially if you're younger.
Yeah. So it's consistency and then doing it over a long period of time.
Yeah, exactly.
Brilliant. Okay. So let's go to the second one. I will become rich through saving.
Yeah. What do you think about that?
So I think it's important to maybe start off with what's the difference between saving and investing. So in a simple manner for me, he's saying, you know, if I'm saving, I'm trying to preserve my money. If I'm investing, I'm trying to make money. So I think there's a key difference in that. And I don't believe the purpose of saving is to become rich. I believe the purpose of saving is to, like you mentioned a little bit earlier, to have an emergency fund. So if it's 2 years, my chimney leaks, I have a little bit of money to pay out of that. So that I know, oh, shucks, I didn't budget for this. So no, it needs to leak and then it's the ceiling and whatever.
Mm.
So I believe saving is for preserving and, you know, putting you in a position where if an emergency happens, that you are able to cover it.
Exactly. Yeah, so both saving and investing definitely has their place. It's not necessarily the one is superior to the other. You need both of them to build wealth. Saving is for your short-term, kind of your emergencies, maybe that holiday you want to go on next year, saving for a car deposit. Usually anything with a 0 to like 12-month, maybe up to 2 years period that you know this is money I need now to access. You know, I need access to it. I need it to grow at a stable rate. And it serves kind of the reason why we need savings is that if the chimney starts to leak, you have emergency cash that you can use to fix it. Because if you don't, you need to go and take out credit card debt. We all know how that's going to play out if you're not careful. So saving is preserving it, absolutely. Well, investing is building wealth. And you need to have savings before you can start investing. That's probably a myth on its own that you can just start investing, because mm-hmm. you kind of build the foundation of your finances, and then the investing is the roof on top of the house. You're not just going to start with the roof. You need to build the foundation, and investing is growing your money. So in a more technical term, if we look at what does a beer cost today? Castlelight, that's like $15. I don't
know. Yeah, probably like 15. But it's almost like 90 rand for six.
Yeah,
quick maths, 15
around rand. About. So what did a Castlelight cost when you and Chick? You know, you weren't supposed to know what that cost in matric when you were first year at university. You know, back in the '80s.
Yeah, well, I was more of a brandy special guy, and I think was 20 rand.
Yeah,
so I think a beer was. In, if I can remember correctly, it was under 10 rand for a dumpy.
Yeah, yeah. So that's how many years ago? About
13.
Yeah. So about a decade ago, this beer that's costing $15 was probably less than 10. So why is that? Why is that the case? It's because of inflation. Inflation just means everything is getting more expensive every year. If you ask your parents, they would say, you know, back in the good old days, I bought a whole Checkers trolley full of goods for 50 rand. You know, now it's costing 2,000. So that is because stuff is getting more expensive. And inflation is usually 5 to 6% per year in South Africa. And if you put your money in the bank and it's only giving you 7%, yes, you seeing the value of your money growing every, the rand amount is increasing, but the value, the real value, if you account take inflation account, you subtract that. So if you get 7% from the bank, inflation is 6%, you're only growing with 1%. But if you invest it in the markets in something like equity or shares, that could potentially give you over the long run between 8 to 12%. So that's already a massive difference. And you think maybe that 4 or 5% is not going to make a massive difference, but compound that over 10, 20, 30 years, it makes a massive difference. So yes, investing is growing wealth, saving is preserving, but you need to have savings in place first before you can start investing. Otherwise, you might have to sell off investments, and that could be in a market downturn and you could lose money.
Exactly. I think there's two things that came out for me in our conversation just now. It's firstly, there's the difference is risk that you're willing to take with savings versus investment. And secondly is the time frame. Right. So saving is short term. You don't want to risk it a lot. You want to know my money is secure. I'm going to have it when I need to have it.
Yeah.
Investing is long term, thinking growth.
Exactly.
Right. Going into the third one, I need a good job that pays a good salary, or looking at it in a different way, you can't save money with a low income.
Yeah, I think we all aspire to earn more, and I think that's not a bad thing. It's good to want to have ambition and to grow and to, you know, build a better lifestyle, because yes, more money does mean you have more flexibility in terms of building a better life, but it's not necessarily a better job, better income going to lead to more savings. I know clients or people in general that earns a lot of money, 100,000 rand a month, and they seem to not be able to get through to the end of the month. I also know people who earn less than 5,000 rand a month, and they can actually save and invest. So it's again, more about what how do you best use the money that you have and live below your means and save. And the having extra money always helps, but it shouldn't be the solution to the problem of managing money.
Correct. Yes, you can manage money well, doesn't matter how much you have.
Yeah,
I think that's the point.
I believe the book's name is The Millionaire Next Door. It's a study that they did on a lot of like American millionaires, and the interesting thing that they found was you always think millionaire, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, you know, those big guys that you see on TV. But it's not actually the case. Oftentimes it's a teacher, a nurse, a janitor even, someone who's kind of low-key, you know, adding a lot of value to society. They're not the top earners, but they are managing money well, and they preserve and they invest. And if you do that, again, over a long enough period, from the beginning of your career up to retirement, then yes, you can actually become a millionaire, but it's going to take time. But the compounding effect is going to do most of the heavy lifting. It's just more about consistency. So you don't have to be the CEO of Apple to be wealthy. You can also be just a normal person.
Correct. Yes. And it's all about, again, managing your money well. So knowing the principles that you want to live according to.
Yeah.
Almost following that golden standard of living under your means. So know what your income, spend always less than that, and always have something to save or invest.
Exactly.
Depending on your specific need.
Yeah.
So I think those three actually came like nicely together.
Yeah.
In terms of getting a golden thread together. So the fourth one is, my past or my circumstances define my future.
And I think in South Africa that is definitely very prevalent, and it's a tough topic to really discuss, because we all have our own story. We all have different ways where we started, you know, how we were raised, in which circumstances we were raised, what opportunities were presented to us, were we able to execute on that opportunities, and that kind of brings us to where we are today. So some people really have it rough. Definitely they had a much tougher way into life. But whilst that is the case, it's also important to not be limited by your circumstances and those beliefs, because there's also people who went through that really excelled past their circumstances and built the life.
Yes.
So whilst we can't necessarily change our circumstances, we can definitely change our mindset. And just as the laws of nature would have it, if you change your mindset and you are determined to succeed, somehow things will happen, opportunities will come. I think you'll be more open, and opportunities will be more visible, and you'll be more likely to execute and to really embrace opportunities in a way that you can excel past your circumstances. Yes. And you should not have that limiting belief, because there are opportunities, but for some it is tougher than others.
Agreed. And like you mentioned, I think it is a difficult topic, especially in South Africa and you know, the past that we've had.
Mm.
And yes, there are more that, you know, that has a privilege of, you know, that more. But there's also so many examples in South African context where, you know, people came out of a township and you know, gained great success in their life. Mm. The one I can think of now is our captain, Siya Kolisi.
Mm.
As an example. So naturally, he's got that talent, but he's also using that talent to his benefit.
Mm.
And the other one I can think of is like a Trevor Noah.
Mm.
And so both of them were, you know, really in harsh circumstances that they grew up. Mm. And they made that mind shift in saying, I will get out of this. And it almost, for me, it gets into that golden thread again. It's my mindset,
yeah.
Right? So yes, okay, maybe I've been dealt a rotten hand, but let's just stand still today and think, yeah, what is my mindset going forward?
Mm.
And how am I going to approach my future? Because if we do that and we make the right decisions, if we make the decision, for example, to follow a podcast and get my financial education up, so to almost empower myself to make the right decisions most of the time. Again, I don't think we as humans will make the right decisions always.
Mm.
And we will probably get to that in behavioral sciences of money and spending money. But the point is to make it the most of the time and then to avoid the mistakes.
Yeah.
And I think if you educate yourself, you've got the right mindset, you've got that abundance mindset, you can come from anywhere and make a success.
Yeah, and that's been proven all over again. And it's really this, I think us South Africans really have that determination and tenacity and grit to really rise above circumstances, that it sometimes feel like it's us against the world. Definitely was with the World Cup, and we just showed them point by point, we will succeed, we will get out. And what I love about Chasing the Sun number two is how they kind of went into the backstories of many of the players, which, as you described, Sia and the rest of the many players of the team really came out of harsh circumstances, and look where they are today. And that's just because they really decided at some point in their life, they decided, you know what, I'll make it. And they got presented an opportunity and they executed, and they just kind of escalated from there onwards. So I think we need to look at those individuals and be inspired to you know, aspire to be like them, as opposed to kind of sinking into the belief that this is how life is going to be.
Yeah, and almost just giving up before you really started.
Exactly.
In your journey. Right, so number five. I just need that one big idea or break to get out of poverty.
Hmm.
I think this also actually ties in quite nicely with the others.
Hmm.
And you know, I don't want to repeat ourselves the whole time. But again, it's not one single step.
Yeah.
It's the multiple steps
mm.
that will get you there.
Yeah. And it's oftentimes success is not finding the one solution. It's finding the many mistakes. It's finding how not to do something 100 times and then getting to the actual point. And that's often how life is you kind of just have to dig into it and try and fail and fail and succeed maybe here and there. But it's step by step. The athlete Tete comes to mind. He won the previous Comrades Marathon last year, and similar backstory where he grew up was very in a very poor environment in the township. But he just decided, you know what, I'm gonna start running just to, you know, just for himself, just to kind of switch off from work, and that now he's at a point where he's winning the Comrades Marathon. And just seeing his journey, he didn't start running and then he won the Comrades. It was repetitive, going small, maybe start walking, then jogging, then running, and then sprinting. And that is now he's a world champion because he was able to put that first step, starting with that first step and just putting one step against. And that's such a nice analogy to investing, because investing is also not making one big, massive move and then you're wealthy. It's small, little. It's almost they seem pointless in itself on face value, because it's such a small step. But if you make it continuously, like running, put one step in front of the other, at some point you're gonna start becoming fit and you're gonna become better and you will then eventually succeed.
Yeah. Well, talking about running, how's your journey into your half marathon? I know you want to run a half marathon in a month's time.
Apparently, I just got an email the other day that I've apparently entered into a half marathon.
apparently.
So my wife entered me into one. So she did the Comrades last year. I'm very proud of her. So I was there and I saw this, you know, where they started and the Chariots of Fire playing, and it's just a very nice atmosphere and it's quite motivating. I probably have to go run this weekend, apparently. I was told this morning. So we'll see. In the rain and wet weather and snow, it's probably going to happen. But it's also having this kind of thing. Now I know I need to run a half marathon, which for some it's very simple. For others, it's a massive thing. For me, it's quite big. And I won't just show up and start running. I need to now prepare. Like, okay, I actually need to go run a 5K, then a 10K, maybe a 15K. To put the kilometers on the legs and to build up fitness so that I don't get injured or pass out halfway through the game.
But it's also having that knowledge of how to train. That's important. You can't just go out on every run and run as fast as you possibly can.
Yeah.
You need to do different runs, long runs, slower runs,
exactly.
Shorter, faster runs. You need to almost get like a complete athlete that will.
Yeah, and it's actually a lot of science that goes into it. It's not just putting on your tacker and running in the direction. It's very much technique, actually, that I'm learning now, which is very similar to finances.
Exactly. Well, just getting back to that point, I think the one example that came to my mind immediately was, I think it was Pokemon Go, right? That video game where everyone caught Pokemons on their smartphones, right? And it just became like an overnight success. And I read an article of the developer of that, and he's like saying, yes, it's an overnight success made in 20 years' time.
Exactly.
So it's for him even, it's, you know, you always think of that end picture of, yes, that's where I want to be. Or you see these success stories of, yo, look at how great that guy was or is. And you don't realize the hard work and grit and small steps that and the amount of steps it took to get to that point.
Overnight success is built over 10 plus years. That's
exactly
the science behind that.
I think all five of those actually came to the same sort of a theme. You need to be consistent.
Yeah.
And you need to start do it over a long time. That's how you gain success. Yeah. And that's how you gain wealth and financial freedom.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So myth number six, I need to buy property to become wealthy.
That's always a fun one. Property, you know, you need to buy property, rental property, investing. It is, I think, quite a fun topic to think about, because you watch the YouTube videos of you know, Graham Stephan and those guys overseas where they say, you know, I started with little and I bought a house, bought a duplex, and then I stayed in the one side and rented out the other one and they paid off the bond. Then I bought another property and another one and now I'm a millionaire. you know, in principle, it can work, but I think it's a very bloated topic, because becoming a successful property investor is actually hard work, and you need a lot of skills to succeed. It's a very difficult field to really be successful if you don't know what you're doing, on the investing side, and also owning a home or a house or a rental property. There's a lot of work that goes into it. You just don't just buy it. There's a lot of money. We just spoke about the rain, the floods. If it's your house, it's your problem. You need to go fix it in the, you know, climb onto the roof when it's raining. It's your problem. Go and get it, big boy. So it's, I think it's nice in principle to think this is my house and I own it. And, you know, again, the Americans living the American dream, buying your house with the white picket fence, it's kind of ingrained into our minds that you need to study, get a job, and an income, buy a house.
Yes, but I also feel like that's how our generation was brought up.
Yeah.
Is get a degree, start a job, and buy a property as soon as you can.
Yeah, and then pay it off. And why do you not, why don't you earn a house at the age of 30? I don't know, what's wrong with you? And that's actually like a big thing, because our parents, the generation before us, were kind of after World War II, they were in economic boom after that, because, you know, it was very tough, World War One, World War Two, and then the economy climbed. So it was they were able to afford houses and have a big family and two cars on maybe one salary. For us, it's not the same anymore. Like our generation, and I know the older people will say, "Ah, you're just lazy," but it's not the case. It's just because property is actually so expensive to buy, and you have to be careful to not over leverage yourself buying too much house than what you can afford, especially with the high interest rates in South Africa.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that some of our listeners are not those people that bought in COVID and, you know, almost maxed out their bond in that period. Because I know from experience, it's been a tough cycle of interest rate increases. I think our bond went up, let me just think quickly, 7,000 Rand from the first payment. Jeez. Till the last interest rate increase.
Sure.
And it's not like I've, you know, all of a sudden increased my salary with 7,000 Rand in that period of time. So it's, but luckily I did tell my wife and one of our other friends that also bought a house in the same period, is don't buy according to your ability now, buy according to when the interest rates was high, you know, just before COVID. Because if you do that, then you know, okay, well, when the interest rates inevitably will go up, I will be able to cover this bond. So I just hope that majority of us of Africans were in that position or thinking that way.
It's but most likely that many are. And again, it's more so at that point in time, it looked very attractive because it was more affordable. And if you didn't have someone to tell you, no, wait, like you were telling your friend, which was a great, I mean, it's very good that he had you in his life at that point. It's just because you're not taught these things. You don't know what you don't know. So you think, oh man, this house looks good. No, if we do a couple of things, we can afford it. And then the interest rates just go up. And it's just because maybe people didn't understand how interest rates work. I didn't back then. So now it's tough having to be in a position where maybe you have to sell the house because you can't afford it anymore. It's a expensive lesson, but it's a lesson either way of making sure you don't over leverage yourself on a bond.
So I think property can be a complex subject, and maybe it's something that we need to discuss on a separate episode, because I think there's a lot of things that we go into.
To unpack.
So firstly, like buying versus renting your primary house or primary property is a much different or a very different conversation and decision tree almost that you need to go through versus buy to let property. And it's different skill sets and you know, different timings, etc., that you need to think of. But in either of those cases, really, if you look at property, it's once again, it's not a fast track to any way to become wealthy. It's a very long-term project.
Yeah.
If you just quickly think around the property prices now versus the rental, you know, prices that you'll get in Cape Town. And Cape Town, I guess, is a good example because they, you know, did go through a boom now recently. I think the market is stabilizing a little bit. But, you know, in the last decade or so, you know, property prices climbed significantly. But I think I saw on Property 24, and I don't know if I'll still find that property, I think it will be interesting to see. But it was literally the same property and it was listed the same day. And I actually got alerts on that area for both renting and buying. And it was literally the same property. The property went on to the market for, I think, 3.6 million, more or less. Mm-hmm. And the rental rate was 27,000, if I remember correctly. So that is a massive difference. So if you go, for example, and put a 100% bond on that, your monthly repayment will be roughly 36,000 rand compared to a 27,000 rand rental in literally the same place.
Yeah. And renting is, the rent you pay is the most you're going to pay, you know, given that utilities is included. Whilst buying, the bond is the least amount you're going to pay, because then it's the repairs and the maintenance and the levies and all those nice things and the transfer fees. So it's buying a house or a property in general, you really have to do your research. You need to look at your entire holistic financial plan. What are your other financial goals that you have? You know, retirement, kids' education. What other loans? Are there still car loans? You know, maybe some credit card debt. And then decide what you can actually afford. Because if you go to the bank and they're going to ask you what you earn, they're going to calculate what you can afford based on what you earn and some arbitrary numbers, you know, talking about your budget that you probably don't even know. So you have to be careful not to overcommit and rather start small and then build from there onwards.
Exactly. So, yeah, my thinking there is also don't go buy the property for the price the bank tells you can afford it.
Yeah,
exactly. Because that's just a good way to put yourself into a position where you're not going to have extra money at the end of the month.
Yeah. And if you want to go into like really property investing and you want to build a property portfolio, then it's very important to structure it correctly from the get-go. And that involves stuff like a company and a trust that we will probably discuss in a future episode. And if that's something that the audience, you know, you guys are interested in seeing, then let us know in the comments if that is maybe an episode or specific questions around property. We can share our knowledge and experience in that and hopefully help someone out there that are interested. Because I think in South Africa, the property market is quite a good market depending on the area. But the reality is we as humans, the number of humans will always increase and the land is limited. So there will always be a demand for property. So in that, using that logic, you know, it should always be a good investment in theory. But it really depends the area that you buy in and how that develops and what type of house and what are your skills. So it's a very complex topic to really just say, you know, I'm going to buy a house. So you need to really do your homework.
It is a complex topic. And I think we need to actually have like a detailed.
Maybe even a series.
Maybe a detailed series. Yeah, because there's also different strategies you can follow.
Yeah.
Different ways you can structure it to get the most benefit from a tax perspective, et cetera, et cetera. But I guess the thing that we want to get to is it's not the only way to get wealth. I think it is a way. I think it's still a long-term way. But the last thing I wanted to say there is I think it is a good strategy if you're buying primary property, if you can afford it, but then pay the bond off as soon as or quickly as possible. Because then you've got that asset. Yeah. And if you stay in that place, once it's paid off, now you've got a big chunk of money that you can put away every month investing.
Yeah.
So it is it is possible. It's, I think what we're saying is not the easiest.
Yeah.
And it's definitely not a shortcut to wealth.
If we look at investing, property is not the easiest way to invest. Contrary to what many people will say, it's probably one of the most difficult ways to be successful. So.
All right. Let's move on to the next one. Otherwise we'll talk all day about property. So number 7. Retirement planning can wait until I'm older or until I earn more money.
Yeah, I think that's quite a common belief. And I think on the upside, it's becoming less and less common because of the internet and the way information is shared. But oftentimes people young in their 20s, they want to live now. You know, I want to do things now, enjoy life now. YOLO, let's go. And they think retirement's not 40 years away. Why should I start thinking about it? But the longer you wait to save for retirement, the more amount, a percentage of your salary you actually have to save. And the numbers become quite scary the closer you get to your date, which oftentimes means that you can't retire at, you know, standard 65, which either going to happen, you're going to have to decrease your level, your quality of life, or you're going to have to work for longer, or you're simply going to have to be reliant on family members, which is not always possible if you don't have family.
Yeah, so you or need to try and find an alternative income stream when you're 65 years old.
Yeah, which is supposed to be retired.
Yes. I'm just going to look on my phone here quickly. I saw an article on a survey that Sanlam did on a few things.
Mm.
And there's quite a nice few stats here. So 50% of surveyed pensioners indicated they felt worried about not having sufficient funds to live comfortably, while 52% feared running out of funds during their lifetime. By contrast, only 35% were worried about their deteriorating health.
Mm.
So for me, that was quite almost like punchy in saying, you know, people in South Africa currently are more worried about not having money when they retire than their health when they retire.
Mm. And it's a scary thought. I mean, even before retirement, thinking, am I doing enough? Am I investing enough? Am I investing in the right things? Because those are very important factors, bringing more clarity to the conversation. But the main kind of idea behind this is you need to start early and you need to start thinking about retirement the day you earn your first salary. Whether you think it is important or not, it is very important. And some unfortunately realize it too late. And there's no magic bullet. If you are close to retirement and you haven't made provision, there's no magic pull or bullet that you can, or lever that you can pull. And the sad reality is oftentimes these people, retirees that really doesn't have enough, they're now trying to find ways to now make up for the lost time. And that's oftentimes where they get scammed and then they lose the little amount that they have. And that's a very sad reality.
Exactly. The one thing that is going for you if you're still young, you're young, is time. Mm. So use that time. That is literally your biggest friend if you think around retirement. Mm. And the closer, like you said, the closer it is, the more it turns from a friend to an enemy.
Yeah, exactly. Compound interest can either work for you or against you. Make sure you're on the right side.
Exactly, exactly. So number 8, you should buy a car. Or you should buy as much car as you can afford per month.
Yeah, that's always a
nice discussion for two men to have.
Yeah, that love cars. Know, we want to go buy a new Bucky, you know, the newest Isuzu. So the thing that I've oftentimes seen is when you go to the dealer, and I've been through this experience myself, and you want to now go buy a car, dealer will ask you, how much can you afford per month? And then you kind of have an idea of, okay, I've looked at my budget. This is kind of the amount, maybe 3,000-4,000 rand.
And then, it's almost like a trick question they catch you in, right?
Exactly. And why would that be like a
catch? So it's effectively, so they're trying to, you know, get the best car to you for the lowest value.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way that they can do that is by jigging the numbers a little bit.
Yeah, smashing the numbers. So
exactly.
You can essentially buy any car for any monthly installment. The only difference is you extend the term, the loan term, or you add a balloon payment. And the balloon payment, maybe we'll create a series on how to buy a car, because that is also quite a meaty topic. But essentially, it's taking like 35% of the value of the car and putting it at the end after you've paid off the loan, and now you need to pay off that amount. So essentially, the car seems cheaper on a monthly basis, but just, you actually pay a lot more in interest.
Exactly, yeah. And what it is, and correct me if I'm wrong, but that balloon payment is still gaining interest as you go through the life of paying off, but you don't even touch the capital as you pay it off.
It's very much, you think you have a cheaper car because your monthly amount that goes off on your bank account is less, but once you've paid off that term, then the bank will be, okay, now you need to pay this 35%. And many times people don't really, they forget about it and they're like, oh, now I need to pay this, and they haven't made, you know, haven't saved that amount. And then they need to refinance that 35%, and then they pay much more. So the interest you pay is a lot more over the term. So what we're getting at is, be careful when you buy a car, because yes, you need to budget, but that budget amount that you want to pay should include the interest on the car, so the installment, the insurance, the fuel, the maintenance, all the other nitty-gritty registration. And you should do that calculation and then see, okay, this is now actually what I can, and kind of reverse engineer it. So when you get to the dealer, you should have done your research. You should know the type of cars you want to drive. So you should actually tell the dealer what car you want to buy, and you should calculate what is the amount that you're willing to pay for the entirety of the car, including all the extras, and then decide as opposed to just the monthly amount, because they're going to try and crunch the numbers until it makes sense. And unfortunately, it's going to cause you quite a lot of financial strain.
Yeah. And part of buying a car is the emotional part.
Yeah.
So don't fall for the other trick that they do in saying, you know, but, you know, we've also got this Tucson. Now, you're looking at the entry level, but just come look at this high line one, you know. Just come sit in it. Just test drive it.
No, just
don't fall
it.
For it.
Smell it. And it's like, oh, but why don't you add bottle protection?
Yeah.
All these add-ons that they try to smuggle. It's definitely emotional. It's called like a lifestyle asset, which is not really an asset. It's more a liability. You need a car to get to work. So sure, in that sense, it could be an asset, but it's costing you money every month, and you need to be careful that you don't over leverage yourself. And also, society also gives us that kind of connect status to cars. So oftentimes, you know, you feel like the better car I drive, the more status I have, the more important I am, I can impress my friends. And that's a very much a consumer mindset that's been driven by the media and advertisements. So be careful, because yes, it's nice buying a new car and having that new car smell, and it's going to last maybe 2 weeks and then it's gone. You're still going to have the installment for the next 6 years. So be very cautious and don't fall for that consumer mindset that you need the most, the newest, the prettiest, the most expensive one. Because
exactly. And you don't buy a car for the status or, you know, looking like the guy in front of your friends. Because they don't actually care, to be fair.
They're too busy with their own stuff.
So. Yeah. Like, you drive off with your very nice bucky and then, you know, 2 seconds later, oh, yeah, let me think about my own child or my own problems. And then you still sit with the payment and, oh, yeah, okay, there was a bit of envy, but, you know, for what? Doesn't make sense.
Cars are probably one of the biggest financial constraints for many people. It's because they just bought too much car that they could afford.
Mm. So didn't you also recently buy a car, and what was your journey?
Yeah, so I drove a Peugeot 207, 2007 model when I was a student, sold it in 2021 it was still driving, but it was close to the end. So my wife and I shared a car for like 3 years, and now it was at a point where we needed to get a second one. So we did a lot of research and looked at our budget, and we discovered that if we kind of looked at the new car versus used car market, and it was very kind of close. So we decided to buy a new car, but we didn't go and buy the most fancy, you know, tech type of car that we could afford according to the dealer. Actually, when we went onto the West Bank app to see what we can afford, they're like, you can afford, you know, I'm not necessarily going to share the amount, but a very expensive car. Which we actually, the car that we bought was like less than a third of what West Bank told us we could afford. And because we knew that we're not going to fall for the tricks that the banks try. Because, I mean, they want to make money. Obviously, yes, they are helping you to buy a car. They're helping your financing. But you should be very cautious because it's always like you qualify. You know, oh, I feel so nice. I qualify. Mm-hmm. Look at me. But you really don't. So, we bought a car that is probably way below our means in terms of societal kind of opinions, but it's a very fuel efficient car that can get us from point A to B. And we love our Maggie. She's doing a good job. So,
Maggie. I call mine Megan.
So. Megan. Oh, yeah. Okay. We've got a Maggie and a Shirley.
Okay. Yeah, we've got a Maggie and a Tiggy.
Tiggy. I like that.
Yeah. And yeah, I guess the important thing is you bought the car for your purpose.
Yeah. Exactly.
And you don't need to have the big bucky for driving around to work in town.
Exactly. It's also more difficult to drive a bucky in town. So.
Exactly.
Especially Cape Town.
Yeah. So we also bought a car like, I think, 3 years ago now. So we bought a Tiguan, the trend line. But for us, it was also in terms of let's see how we can minimize our monthly repayment with the deal that we want. So there's no balloon payments or anything like that. It's a straight up 5 year, and we are paying it off that way. But the thing for us was, let's see how we can get the best car for the buck that we have, but we didn't buy new.
Mm.
So we went on Cars.co.za, Auto Trader, and we looked for, I would say, more or less 6 months before we got the car and say, yes, this is the car with the right mileage, with the, you know, the right price.
Mm.
And just a caution on that as well. If you're buying a second car and it's higher mileage, you need to be conscious of it, that you are taking more risk.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, so we bought it and it was still in maintenance plan, and there were a few things. There was something in the engine that went wrong, and it was almost like a 70,000 rand problem. Luckily, we were still in the maintenance plan. And then after that, we decided, okay, well, when we're out of the maintenance plan, we will actually get a warranty, which is quite cheap. It's, I think, 300 odd rand a month. But it can save us a hell of a lot of money if something like that happens again. So first of all, be conscious of the risk that you take. Higher mileage cars will ultimately give you more problems than a brand new car. And secondly is the servicing. So it's expensive to service cars.
Yeah.
So be conscious about that. And again, the higher the mileage, the more expensive it gets, because you'll need to replace parts. You'll need to do major services at certain intervals. So all of that stuff. So yeah, just really do the research before you jump in.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's move to our second last point. As soon as I win the lotto, my financial problems will be over.
No, always that. If I have more money, more problems. I think, you know, again, more money, yes, for sure, it will help live a better lifestyle. Maybe it will help you get out of debt, build up an emergency fund, have more to invest that can make, you know, give you better returns. So in principle, sure, but having more money is not necessarily going to solve the problem of managing money well. If you can't manage little, you won't be able to manage a lot. There are some people that can manage a lot of money well, but more money also means more complexity. It's more stuff, more moving parts, more taxes. So it becomes quite complicated. So yes, for sure. I mean, I won't necessarily say it's a bad thing to win the lotto. Of course, it's a lot of money, but rather see how you can use the money for good and still maintain a good lifestyle and rather be more responsible. I don't know. I haven't really thought about winning the lotto. I mean, it could be fun.
Could be fun. I think it will be fun. I think I'll go on long vacations.
I mean, I won't mind it, you know.
I don't think I'll necessarily quit my job, but I will definitely take a long-term sabbatical and go see the world,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, sure.
So I think it's always that dream, but that's the thing, right? Lotto sells you almost like this false hope and false dream. Mm. Like it's really just better to get into this financial rhythm that you want to be in and create that wealth yourself.
Yeah.
Also, I feel like if you all of a sudden, you know, jump into this mash of wealth, you know, might find yourself in a position where you don't know how to manage money.
Mm.
So you'll just go and spend it on, you know, all these things that you don't need, and it will lose value, and you will sit with nothing at the end of the day as well if you don't get your money habits right, your money behavior right.
Exactly, yeah.
So lotto, I don't think, is the answer.
No, please don't think it will. And the chance of winning the lotto is very slim, so it's not, it's very, very, very rare. So yeah, don't count on it.
Yeah, if you've won the lotto though, come talk to us.
Yeah, reach out, you know.
Yeah.
Join us. You need some capital.
Exactly, yeah. Come invest in us.
Yeah.
All right, last one. TikTok is the best place for financial advice.
Classic. So what do you think? Are you on TikTok, Rion?
No, actually. So I made a decision a few years ago to stay off social media. So I don't have TikTok, I don't have Instagram, I don't have Twitter. The only thing I do have is Facebook, and mainly for Facebook Marketplace, because I love a bargain.
Mm.
So if I'm really looking for something, I'll always go to Facebook first.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah. So maybe, yeah. Do you have TikTok?
I do. I'm guilty. I do have TikTok. I think I have it because I create content on it, and I kind of want to see how the trends go and adapt to it. I haven't really posted lately. I do think that the audience on TikTok is a lot different than on YouTube. But what I've seen scrolling through TikTok, there's always, you know, you look at the algorithm of TikTok, it's very much short form content. So it needs to be engaging. It needs to be eye catching. You need to really grab an audience. And if we put this podcast on TikTok, an hour long, talking about, you know, developing good financial habits, starting slow, building wealth, that's not probably too exciting. People just scroll past. But if we start off like, you know, if you do this, these three things, you'll become a millionaire, you know, whatever. And we have the Lambos and we've got the nice jackets. Then people are going to engage and like, yeah, who do I call? Where do I put my money? So I think it's a double-edged sword, the internet and having access to information, because I love the fact that we are able to produce content to the masses and that people can actually listen to advice, not advice, but guidance in terms of how to better structure their finances. But it's also a double-edged sword because not everyone giving financial or producing financial content are equipped to actually do that. And I'm not saying that you need to be a financial planner necessarily to share knowledge. That's not the case. But it's oftentimes a very fine line of producing content to actually want to help people versus trying to make money off of people that are either desperate or maybe gullible and quite susceptible to scams. Agreed. Happening, yeah. all over.
So I think we both can agree that content creation can have a massive potential benefit, yeah, to our population and to our country, but it needs to be in a responsible manner.
Yeah.
You can't throw out these marketing slogans really in terms of, you know, get rich quick type of scenarios.
Mm.
And normally, just the almost rule of thumb I always follow, if it's too good to be true, it is too good to be true. Yeah. It's not true. So don't fall for those things of, you know, give me 10,000 rand, in the next month you'll have 100,000 rand. I'm just using a stupid example. Mm. But it's always, it doesn't work out. It's either a scam or it's, you know, something is not right there. Because, yeah, getting money and growing money isn't easy. And we've seen it in our own personal lives. We've seen it in our parents' lives. So really being that consistent investor and saver over a long period of time is really the only way that you can have, you know, these generational wealth builders.
Yeah, I mean, there are different ways to invest, and yes, some are much quicker than others. And sometimes you will be lucky. Maybe I'm not saying that all that type of investments are scams. Most of them are actually really sound financial strategies,
mm-hmm,
but it's oftentimes very complex. So another general rule of thumb is only invest in stuff that you truly understand. So if you see an advert or you see a piece of content that looks like, oh, this looks fun, I'm going to try it, then fine, do it. But before you do it, go spend some time and research and do research on the topic, the platform, the people that's pitching you the idea. Go see what other people say. And kind of what you mentioned earlier, when you want to buy something, put it in the cart, but then wait. Spend 24 hours and just kind of take a step back. Because oftentimes then you think about it and the emotional side of, I want this now, tends to more rational and logical, like, okay, but is this really going to be the right thing for me? And we're not trying to step on others, but what we're trying to achieve with this podcast is to cultivate more of a responsible mindset of investing. And yes, it is mostly going to be slow, and sometimes there's more exciting parts, definitely, but you have to really understand what you're investing. And if you don't understand and you're going to put your money into something that you don't know what's going to happen or how it's going to play out, and you get scammed, then the only person you can blame is yourself, and you need to take the responsibility.
Yeah.
And the guy who sold you the scam, yes, it's his fault as well, but you have to do introspection and make sure that next time you're going to have to be more clever and responsible. Agreed.
Yeah. So just to be clear, I'm not saying that all TikTokers are scammers.
Yeah, definitely not. There are some good, yes, content creators, and I would encourage more people to share knowledge and what you've, yes, learned and on a public platform, definitely, but do it with the right intention. And if you do have a service or a product that you want to sell, then by all means do it, as long as it is with the intent of helping people build better lifestyles for themselves and
exactly
explain how it works and then help people to understand what you are producing.
Yeah, but I guess in any content that you see in on any platform, just be wary before you put your money. And like you said,
yeah,
like be really aware of what you're putting your money into, mm, and know the asset that you are buying.
Yeah, exactly.
So do your own research. for me, it's also not financial advice. Our podcast is also not financial advice.
Yeah.
It's maybe giving knowledge or, you know, getting a bit of training or something like that, and stuff like that will be on YouTube or TikTok and all of that. It's not financial advice for me because you won't have a full picture of a person's financial background and all of that. So it can't possibly be financial advice. It's more of giving you an idea.
Education, yeah. So financial advice is when a financial planner sits with you and they spend time to learn about you, your past, your future goals, your family, your assets, liabilities, income, expenses, your investments, your insurance, getting to know that whole story and then using that, doing analysis and then making recommendations. That's financial advice. The video you see on internet of someone saying this thing might work is not financial advice because they don't know you and you don't know them. They don't know your story. So that maybe it worked for them. It's not necessarily going to work for you. Stuff that we share on this podcast is our own knowledge and experience, what worked for us and what didn't. It's not necessarily this going to be the same for everyone. So see it as education and upskilling yourself and ask questions and question everything and spend some time to educate yourself. And that is the only way to really become successful in anything in life.
Great. Thanks, Peter. So that concludes our 10 financial myths. So hopefully that made this world of finance again a little bit more clear. And I think that's our purpose and our journey that we want to follow in terms of making finance fun and also understandable, that everyone can talk about it. Thanks again, Peter. But before we close off, how was the castle light?
Yeah, man. It's a castle is also one of those mandatory things at the braai with the rugby. I think, you know, it's either castle or Zamaleki. Most people go for the castle light because they feel better about themselves. Yes. And, going on the diet.
But no, the calories are less. Yes, exactly.
yeah, man. I'm looking at myself, you know. But it's, I think I like the taste. It's nice and light. It also, it's a cold beer is always nice after, during a hot day. And it's one that I've always loved in the past. So
yeah, agreed. I would say Castle Light is my go-to beer. So yeah, if you see me at a rugby game, I'll definitely have a Castle Light in the end. And like you said, it's one of those iconic brands in our country. So we've done two now in a row.
So we're probably gonna run out of beer soon. So if you have any other suggestions for beverages or food, drop them in the comments. Please don't try and kill us. Be nice.
Yes, please.
We'll try and find whatever you recommend, but it needs to be edible at least.
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but awesome. Thank you so much, Rion. It was a lucky episode, and we will see you guys in the third episode next week.
Thank you.
Awesome. Cheers.